I will not be pushed, filed, stamped, indexed, briefed, debriefed, or numbered. My life is my own.
Welcome to another quality episode of Hacker Voice Radio. It is the 23rd of August 2005. And we will be talking a bit more about tech, and we've got a few stories to go through. So I'll just let Scobie introduce himself.
Hi there, I'm Scobie. And then I'm an alcoholic. No, wait, no, I'm a drunk alcoholic.
And I'm just in the Kodak channel, because for some reason there's a lot of talk about it. I've got no idea what's going on with there or what the hell is going on.
Noobs. It's full of noobs, people looking for sex, and bots.
So it's a good quality channel all round.
Well, you're going to be spammed in IRC with private messages all night now since you've entered it.
Excellent.
Every boss got you coming in.
Cool. So is Black Ratchet and Delete and who else? I can't see anyone else on here, but Lucky Gay has joined Kodak. Hello, Lucky Gay. Are you feeling lucky tonight? My name is Bilal. I'm 21, male, and horny.
Oh, God.
Oh, sorry, this is on. Oh, I forgot the mic was on. Sorry about that.
Yes. Alright, so what have we got tonight?
What have we got tonight? Well, I was thinking about talking about a little bit of UK related news, which is kind of what we're lacking these few episodes, regarding Bluetooth and advertising in the UK. Then, if you want, you can take any one of these stories. The next one would be about Microsoft, and looks like they're contradicting themselves on their can spam, spam, no spam policies. Then we're moving into high definition televisions and their ability to not play unregistered DRM video. And then we'll be pushing into new methods of analyzing people's browsing habits via their CPU ID.
The thing about the high definition not displaying in people's existing monitors.
Yeah.
We actually covered that in the original pilot of the show, didn't we?
I think we did, yeah.
Yeah. That is fucked up.
It is, yeah. So basically what it's saying is, correct me if I'm wrong, if you buy this new software, if you buy like Windows Vista when it comes out eventually, and you try and play a DRM protected high definition video, a DVD or such like media, you will not be able to see that on your monitor
unless you purchase a special DRM HDTV monitor,
which will cost you in a round of $3,000, I presume.
Yeah, that's for the, what that is, see, Apple's 30-inch display.
Yeah.
By the way, it's awesome. I actually saw one at the Apple Store in New York. People who have just bought that.
Yeah.
And then upgrade to, macOS
right.
10.5
mm-hmm.
won't be able to display any DRM protected videos.
Right.
And the way Microsoft is handling this is not by saying you can't display this content.
Mm-hmm.
They're either going to make the content really, really small.
Yeah.
Or they're going to fuzz up the image just to fuck with you.
Yeah.
Instead
yeah.
of just saying, you can't play this.
Right. So basically, what they're doing is they're pushing people into purchasing more hardware.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised Apple's gone along with this because so far they've been actually against DRM.
Yeah.
So I'm really surprised that they've went along with this.
Yeah.
It's probably got something to do with the fact that Microsoft owns part of Apple.
Yes, exactly.
Coerced them into saying, do this.
Yeah, they're a Microsoft bitch.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That won't fly well with people.
Sure.
Because see, since people find out that, oh, by the way, if you download this movie or if you have this certain DVD or whatever, you can't watch it because this is, you can't.
Mm.
They're fucking...
They can, I think I have a little comment there. I think I said they can suck my balls.
Yes.
And,
email.
Whoopity fuckity do.
Whoopity fucking do was for the HD DRM.
That's right, yeah.
And the suck my balls was for Intel CPU ID.
Yeah, and then also, or maybe I'll just watch an old unprotected content that I have lying around. Heck, maybe I'll just read a book. They still let us do that, right? Fucking no. The reason that is said is because. They're actually releasing electronic books, ebooks. Now, everybody knows about ebooks. You know, they come in all sorts of formats. Adobe PDFs and all that kind of stuff, or just simple fucking text files. Now, these ebooks are going to be sold to students in the US, and they're going to be controlled by a feature that acts like digital rights management. It is, in fact, a digital rights management application. Whereas you will only be able to use this book, it will probably be much, much less than the actual physical book in terms of cost. But you will only be able to read this book from one machine only. You will not be able to copy this text file book, and you can only read it for a certain length of time. So it does have a kill switch. And after that point of time, you will not be able to read it anymore. You'll probably scramble it or something along those lines.
Do you know what? I actually ran into this last night. Now, I have Adobe Acrobat Reader 5.
Right.
And I'm reading this the PDF. Now, I have thousands of ebooks in on my file server, thousands. And I ran into this one where it asked for a password, and I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It's like, PDFs don't have passwords. But it did.
Right.
And actually, when I first ran into this, it was on Acrobat 7. And I was like, right, maybe if I go back to Acrobat 5, then it'll just overlook it.
Yeah.
But it didn't.
No.
And I think Acrobat 5 was released in 2001 or something like that.
Yeah.
So that means Adobe has been planning this for a very long time.
That's right, yeah. And you've got to see something that's recently happened. It was only brought to my attention, I think, this morning, where there is actually a virus, a bug, that will exploit a buffer overflow in Adobe Reader for PDFs, where it will actually point you to a corrupted PDF. You open it up, seeing as PDFs are can be built into web pages.
Yeah.
And they can let you run malicious code on your computer. Now, I haven't seen Adobe, or Adobe, whatever you want to call it, have security issues for a very long time. It's something new to me. So it might be something people want to check up on, because that's a big, big issue. Either it's something built in and they haven't said it for a while, so they're trying to force people to upgrade to some different feature which will maybe include a higher encryption rate on the passwords, so that people can't just simply run a brute force to crack the passwords on encrypted content.
Mm-hmm. Well, in addition to that, the passwords are essentially DRM, except in password form.
Yeah.
You know, you have to obtain a password or like key or something like that. It's just a download a license for, you know, if you're comparing it to DRM. I actually forgot what I was going to say there. Oh yeah, see, when it comes to cracking it, I eventually got to read it because, well, I cracked it. I think I'm going to find another fucking book. It was a good gene.
How did you go about cracking it? Tell everyone, go on.
Google.
Ah.
I've been cracking it since 1999. So it's actually been around since then.
Oh, right.
But the whole thing with e-books, right, this really pisses hackers off because part of the hacker ethic is information belongs to the world.
That's right, yeah.
You cannot restrict it no matter what. If you create something, you let everybody know. You never keep it to yourself.
Exactly.
So that's something that really pissed me off.
It's definitely the white hat way. And I have to say, in terms of myself, I don't like to class myself in any of those categories because I don't feel that I really need to, in a way. I don't have to do that. Also, just to talk about articles that we have put up on our website, there is an article by Scobie and relating to what is hacking. Now, I've read through maybe halfway through it, and it's very interesting. Also, recently today, I have uploaded an article talking about infamous hackers and freakers in the UK. So, a history going back from the early 70s of hackers and their arrests and everything like that, going right up to 1999, 2000, something like that.
Yeah, and see, if you actually look at it, it's fucked up.
Yeah, it's really, really fucked up. It's a huge, huge file, and I didn't really bother to format it, so I'm thinking of keeping it there until I find a way to either host it as a doc file or host it as a PDF or something like that.
Keep it there just now because I've actually got something in mind for the article section, which will integrate with the site.
Brilliant.
Hopefully it will work from a database like Postgres or something like that, but if not, I'll have to go with HTML based. I'm hoping for it's just like a control panel where you can go into, you know, up, or anybody can go into, just sign in to say, upload an article, and then they go, something like in a wiki.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, they're free to copy and paste.
Yeah.
And reformat it for themselves if they wish. That's just a holding place for it now, currently. Also, I will be releasing more freaking information about the UK related to things you can do online, and basically the old zines and old text files of freaking. There's a lot of inconsistencies, a lot of white lies and stuff like that, things about, you know, all the boxes that would run and don't run, and there's quite a lot of updated information right now that is relevant to today's kind of, well, today's freaking scene, which is kind of dying out, I would have to say.
Yeah.
Welcome back. You sound very, very choppy. There might be something up with your connection or my connection.
Is that better?
That's much, much better.
Alright, so it seemed that I was actually streaming Rant Radio and I had it muted instead of paused. Sorry.
Yeah, you had your porn downloads going and everything at the same time.
No, I put them on, go to sleep.
Okay.
I have to wait for them that way.
Yeah. I have to say, I am a big fan of South Park. Now, I don't know how many people would agree with me there, but I can't wait for the next season to come up. And it should be coming back in about 58 days and something like that. So it'd be good.
I haven't watched that in years.
Yeah, and also I just want to say there is, every time you see somebody with BT Central Plus or a UK host file, talk to them as soon as you see them jump on the channel and let them know about what we're doing. Because I just saw somebody jump on there and I might, well, actually, I don't think it'll be wise for me to talk to them while I'm actually doing a live show. But anyone who can hear this, just, you know, find the nick or something like that and just have a chat. So, yeah. Spread the news.
Was that in Binrave?
That's right, yeah.
Right, I don't go into that anymore.
Sorry?
I don't go into Binrave anymore.
Right.
There's too many uneducated people in it now.
Sure. Well, I just jump on there and idle. Just yeah. So people that know that I'm there.
No, I don't bother with IRC anymore. The forums are still good, but the Binrave channels went downhill.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to have to run off to Planet Lave's patented piss break.
God.
So if you want to take over for the next 15, 10, 20, half an hour...
Are you sure you're going for a piss or something else?
I'm going for a quick piss. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got the webcam on. You can check. Come on.
No thanks.
All right, I'll be right back. You take over.
Okay. All right. So another story that Belial gave me, if I can just hurry up and get it, was to do with something that was interesting, and it's taken ages to load. Alright, sorry about this. iMedia Connection has an interesting article, which he hasn't provided me the link with, on a new approach to web analysis. The author claims that he is describing new cutting-edge methodologies for identifying people, methodologies that, as at this point, no web analytics product supports. What's more interesting, the new technology does choose of many seem unhappy with the again. What this is you transmit your CPU ID along with every HTTP request. Okay? That's not a good thing because you know, you get that's the ultimate form of spyware. You know, that's stupid. I'll get into this more when Blair comes back because he knows more about it than what I do. I'm just reading his show notes, but it'd help if he actually gave me an article. Microsoft spam. I think the only way that they're actually, you know, reversing the whole idea on this because they probably think they can actually make money out of spam. That's the only time they seem to like anything is when they think they can make money off it. And, lag. Sorry about that. But, if you have any stories or anything you want to say, you can jump on ISC and ISC.download.net and the channel is HVR, or if you want to call into the live's lovely studio and have a talk with us, you can call us on +44 121 282 554, and our contact details are on our website at hackervoice.co.uk. Right, so hopefully Bly will be back in a minute and I don't have to bore you all. Let's just see what AWS is kicking about to kill time.
Okay, I'm back.
Hey!
So how did it go?
Good.
What did you cover while I was away?
How incompetent your show notes are.
My show notes?
I'm kidding.
I have no show notes.
On the email.
On the email? Oh, right, okay.
You talked about an article about transmitting the CPU ID with every HTTP request.
Right.
But you never gave me the link to the article.
Ah, sorry.
So I'll kind of...
It's gonna
I was
start.
Flying by the seam of my pants. I talked about it.
Yeah.
Listen, Intel is finally spilling the beans on their new architecture.
Oh, right.
Ooh, right.
Tell me more.
It's called Intel Merom. Merom. And it's designed from the ground up. Okay, so what's it called? Intel has finally talked about its new architecture, the Meron family of chips, where these chips are often characterized as a Pentium M derived or tweaked versions thereof.
Right.
They are not even close. I'm just reading the article, sorry.
Yeah.
They're not. It's not even close. Merom is a new ground up from. It's ground up new. This person cannot fucking write to save themselves. Seriously. Merom is ground up new, comma, from the philosophy to the architecture, but it carries on with the familiar technologies from the previous Pentium 4 and mobile Pentiums. It is going to be good. Does this person even speak English? In Google for
maybe not.
I'll try and give you the gist.
Okay.
The first thing you notice is that Intel has abandoned long pipe, high speed, lower IPC model that was the norm for the last few years. Merom is just about half the pipeline length. Now has 14 stages, but whether that is 14 critical stages or 14 overall was not stated. Either way, it's going to give a lot, but you give up a lot of megahertz to the Pentium 4. But we end up faster anyway. Do you know what? I'll just go to the Intel fucking website either. Fucking hell. Intel developer forum, that's it. God, people can't wait to save themselves. Make me sound bad.
When would you want to do your report on Vista and other things?
Friday, because that'll give me more time to put more in it.
Cool, okay.
Whereas I've just been flying through it, but I want to spend a lot of time on the CLI.
Right.
I think the story now. Oh, Intel don't have it on the site. Well, suffice to say, they're getting a new. They've designed a whole new processor architecture, built from the ground up. Whereas people thought, you know, it'd be based on previous ones,
right?
You know, like they've done for so many years.
Yeah.
It's going to be probably about half the power.
Okay.
But faster.
Right. How does that work?
I have no idea. Hopefully I'll find out by tomorrow's show, but see, try to read this article, the person has very bad English.
Yeah.
So
it's even harder to read it out live there.
Yeah, it'll make it complicated for a lot of people.
Sure.
Ali Dem Erijian in San Francisco.
So let's see if I can jump on and talk about the billboards. Basically, the story says that billboards in the UK have been using Bluetooth to beam media clips at passing cellular phones, mobile phones for us UK guys. The system has been dubbed Bluecasting, and 70,000 people accepted the ads. When billboards know your name, that's when you really need to worry. Someone hacks it and starts broadcasting Goatsy in place. Watch out when someone figures out how to hack your Bluetooth automatically, grab all your personal information and tailor the advertisements accordingly. That's when you really need to be afraid.
That's what he says about taking Bluetooth information from your phone.
Yeah.
You can actually do that already.
That's correct, yeah. It's pretty simple to do. All you need is a Bluetooth dongle and a laptop. Now, as far as these adverts go, I haven't been personally aware of them. This is news to me today. And all for those 17,000 people that have accepted the ads, I just want to say why. And also, in Bluetooth as it is, inherently is unsecure. So you could send somebody a message and it could say, "This is a message from Coke, do you accept, yes or no?" And it will give you a nice picture of somebody's ass being opened up really wide.
See that picture? I know the exact picture you're talking about, right? It was going about a DEFCON, right?
Yeah.
But the very first copy of Mac OS X86 turned out to be fake.
Right.
And it was a picture of this guy holding his ass wide open.
Well, when it boots up or something.
Yeah, but here's the thing, right? I actually had TV out into my big telly.
Yeah.
And there was this guy holding his ass on my TV. This 40-inch TV.
Fuck.
And I was like, fuck's sake, get that off. But actually downloaded the proper version, the proper developer version of OS X for x86, and it rocks.
Yeah.
I'm playing about it just now.
Cool. I just want to say, I really hate these Google ads that come up next to your emails. Free Bluetooth phones. And I'm talking about Bluetooth advertising.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. But
RS-232 to Bluetooth module.
Yeah. You're getting the same thing, I guess, as me. But I do want to say, if this is happening, why don't we take it into our advantage? Why not start broadcasting? Why not start broadcasting this show via Bluetooth to 70,000 people? Because 17,000 people would accept it. And why not spread the virus? I don't mean as in maliciously, but as in our virus, the thing that we're talking about every day.
Freedom.
What's that?
Freedom.
Freedom, yeah, exactly. And also, in today's news, protesters against animal rights have finally gotten the upper hand as a farm has closed down. Basically, what they're doing is they're farming animals, guinea pigs, and such like. So, what's that?
Yeah, they're breeding guinea pigs.
Yeah, they're breeding guinea pigs for something's happened to my tongue. I don't know. It's just gotten bigger, or I got bitten by a wasp or something. They're breeding guinea pigs for scientific testing. Now, what really concerned me about this story was that every single word was extremist, 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 this and that. Now, I just want to say, how do you classify an extremist? If you're using the word extreme, one extreme can be greater than the other for some people. One extreme may not be as extreme for someone else. If you're taking the route of extreme sports or extreme, how do you classify something like that? Now, obviously, these people are standing up for themselves, for other things that cannot stand up for themselves, like small animals and pets and guinea pigs and such like rodents. If you can see what I'm trying to get to, you will understand that we could be classed as extremists because we are extreme in our way of bringing freedom of speech to people.
Yeah, and but the only reason that the press called the processors extremists is because the only reason that the company that bred the animals closed down is because it was
oh dear, some insane Skype problems.
You know, protesting, you know, holding signs, having face-to-face talks with people.
We did miss.
Did you catch everything?
We missed everything up to holding signs up, protesting, and talking to people.
The only reason that we're called extremists is because they got their message through by intimidation.
Yeah, that's right.
That to me is extremists. You know, whereas you can, you know, you can march around, hold signs, face to face talk with them.
Do you think that would work though? Do you think they could face to face for 5, 6, 7 years while this keeps on happening and people are shunned and pushed aside? Somehow I really don't see that happening. Now, I wouldn't call myself a very, you know, red person, as in I'm a communist and I want to fight the capitalists and shit like that. I quite like a capitalist society, but you can always have the most fucking, you know, you can't win against a big organization. Now, taking an example, which is a group of people that were protesting severely against McDonald's and their advertising to children, saying that their food is medically unhealthy. It is in fact poison in a cardboard box, which is McDonald's food. And they were subpoenaed by McDonald's, and they were sued for libel charges. Now, myself, if that happened to me, I don't think I could withstand 6-7 years of fighting them in court. Now, McDonald's, as they are, a very, very powerful multinational company, corporation, in fact. So how do you go against something like that? I really don't know.
Yeah, it's hard because I can hear myself.
Yeah.
No, but you got headphones in?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I can't hear myself now.
That's okay, good. Cool.
The thing with McDonald's is because they are so big, because we live in a capitalist society.
Yeah.
It does make it a lot harder, where the only leverage, the only language that people speak is money.
Sure.
And people would rather have money than common sense.
Mm.
Now, if those people really did have the medical evidence to prove that McDonald's food was unhealthy to small children, then McDonald's should have listened and the courts should have listened.
Yeah.
Whereas they had to pay McDonald's, who have got more than enough money as it is, for a libel.
Basically, what they were trying to say is that, how dare you say our food is unhealthy? We'd advertise it because it's fun for children, and we give a rich and warm environment to young children and safety, and make sure that they associate McDonald's food with fun. Hence, they will grow up and relate that to in their later years, and significantly eat more McDonald's food than anything else. Now, I myself,
and get fat.
Yeah, and get fat. Now, I myself despise McDonald's.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone else can agree with
me
there. Yeah, and anybody else who wants to comment or call into the show is free to do so. Our number is, in the style of a pirate radio station, is 01212882554. And you're free to email us to hackervoice@gmail.com.
Also, you can jump on IRC.
Yeah, you can also do that. Our channel is HVR on any Dalnet server. And if you do enjoy the show, please do tell someone about it and pass the information on. Now, we're not telling you to do that. We're just saying, you know, you make up your own mind.
See, back to the thing about the billboards and the Bluetooth.
Yeah.
Now, most cellular phones, or mobile phones as they're called in the UK,
yeah,
are Java embedded. They're created with Java. Now,
that's right, yeah.
We all know, right, because we've probably all experienced it, how pathetic Java has gotten in the past few years in terms of security.
Yeah.
Now, if you have a Java phone and people are sending you stuff through Bluetooth, you're going to see a hell of a lot more. I'm theorising here, but you might see a hell of a lot more phone viruses. You
sure,
might see a lot
sure.
of phone viruses stealing people's numbers, maybe hijacking your account, you know, getting you know, whatever information is stored on your phone. And people don't just use their phone for talking to people now, they use it for electronic organisers and all sorts of shit, you know.
For real.
It's scary to think what you can actually do with Java phones.
Yeah, actually me and a friend of mine did an experiment with the security of my phone, and he managed to dial out to an ISP through my mobile phone. Now, my mobile phone is a Nokia 7610. It's a Java-embedded Symbian software mobile phone, which currently does not have any embedded security apart from standard Bluetooth verification methods. Now, he was able to freely insert contacts into my mobile phone and vice versa. Now, the reason why I wasn't able to do anything to his PDA, because it was running Windows CE, so Windows Mobile for PDAs, which had some sort of very basic firewall on it, I assume.
I wouldn't know about the Windows Mobile software, because I don't use it.
No, neither do I. But
the last mobile software I used was Windows CE for a HP Granada 720.
Right.
And that was, 2001 or something like that.
Mm. Just want to give shouts out to all the people in our IRC channel.
All two of them?
All four of them, if you include us. Sometimes I talk to myself. What? I get lonely.
Yeah, I've done that a few times as well. Prove it.
Yeah. Hi, Bilal. Hi, how's it going? Oh, you know, not bad. Just sitting here talking to myself. Oh, okay. It's one of those days.
Yeah. And you wait 5 minutes and then you say, if I'm not careful, I end up talking to myself.
Yeah. Sometimes even I have, like, you know, arguments with myself. You know, I'm going to own you. I know where you live. Yeah, I know, because I'm me, but you're me. And yeah, okay, I'll just shut up now.
I don't need IRC to do that. Excuse me for just one moment.
I will do. It's the voices in my head. I don't know, you know, things happen. I hope you're enjoying the background music. It's just a collection of DJ Hype and other various artists. Some drum and bass and good stuff like that. If you don't like drum and bass, do send me an email or tell me so I can then do some other stuff. Also, I do apologize on behalf of Scobie for yesterday's show, as his internet went down. So we weren't able to do a full tech episode, but I did do a live set all by myself, which I don't think can be tuned into, but as far as I know, I don't know. Also, I'm looking forward to seeing everyone again in the 2600 meeting, and just as a quick release of information, we will be looking into setting up our own Hacker Voice meetings, of which we might piggyback on the days of the 2600 meeting or set up our own times.
Back.
Hello.
Hello. Since Planet's not here, then we have to make up these piss breaks.
I think this is... Whoa, we would go again. God, I really gonna have to do something about this Skype issue. If anyone can suggest a better free system of being able to set up... Hello.
I'm going to kill this fucking thing.
Yeah, I was just saying, I'm gonna have to do something about this Skype issue. I don't know if it's me or if it's you or if it's both of us, but we're gonna have to find a better way of... doing some sort of conference call with the Skype quality and the freedom of it.
Sucks. We could, when I get my Vonage installed, we could probably do a conference call thing. We can just...
We could do, yeah, because Vonage to Vonage calls are free.
Yeah. Plus, like, all calls to, before on each are free anyway. So
yeah, that's right, yeah.
Could probably do that and just hook you know, getting a phone extension, just hook into the, what you call it, the your sound card.
Yeah, and also it's a good thing because we want to be calling UK people, so it'll be free for us to call UK people.
If you can't phone us, then email us your phone number or tell us at an IRC and then we'll call you.
Yeah, definitely, and we will call you for free of charge to you, and we won't be revealing your docs or anything, and if you are concerned about that, send us a private message or send us an email or don't reveal your information at all, and, you know, fuck off.
All emails with numbers on them will be deleted after the show.
That's definitely true, yeah. We won't be keeping any logs, I don't think so anyway. Although I have received a few very strange voicemails. One was from someone, fuck knows where, Lithuania or something like that. I don't think I can play it during a call, but it consisted of somebody going, hello, hello. Hello, hello, and then hanging up. Now, as far as I can imagine, that was somebody trying to call somebody and get in the Hacker Voice radio channel. I don't know. I don't know how many Lithuanian listeners we have.
I didn't think we had any listeners at all.
yeah, I was quite surprised at the fact that people were actually listening to this stuff. But anyway, I guess my voice is
quite soothing. We've got a good few listeners now.
What's that?
It says we've got a good few listeners now.
We do, yeah. And the news has spread to the place where we wanted it to spread. Not in saying that we want to block out the US listeners, because, you know, Ionix did jump on the show once. So
yeah.
He's more than welcome to come back, because I really do like listening to what he's saying. And he's very, very, you know, clued up on the US stuff.
Yeah, he gave a good insight into US cell phones of the early 90s.
So, yeah, and I'm all about the old school, and it's good. And also, in related hacks, I hacksawed my wireless phone. Basically, I was pissed off with it not being able to reach my downstairs base station. So I ripped it apart, found where the aerial was, got myself a nice thick cable, and soldered it onto the aerial so that it has a longer aerial. Now it has perfect reception of about 200 meters outside my house, which is good, so I can use it as a simple mobile phone to pop to the shops and also make calls for free. So it's cool.
Yeah, it's good. There's actually a few phones that if you go to like Index or other phone shops or anything like that, you can get phones that go a good 500 meters.
Yeah.
Wireless handhelds, so that's nice.
Yeah, also there are digital options. I think my one is an analog option. It has a fat chip in the back for all that kind of good stuff. Also, it has its own PBX so that I can transfer calls within my own phone network.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that's my phone going off in the background right now.
Yeah, it was going off earlier on.
Yeah. I have no idea who's calling me because it's too dark to see, but I'll ignore that call. Also, the ability to be able to transfer calls and make calls within your own house if you have more than one phone is also quite good.
Yeah, all the deck phones have that. All the Digital Equipment Corporation, but
yeah.
It's a standard for wireless phones in the UK.
Right. That's pretty cool. So, it's just a quick hack. If anybody's interested to doing that, it's quite simple. I probably won't be releasing any information on how to do it, because it's very simple. All you have to do is open it up, see where your aerial is, and get a nice fat cable. And we've just lost Scobie. Again. Welcome back. I think I've just lost my internet connection. And yes, I have. I've lost my internet connection, which is not fantastic. Probably because somebody's just called me downstairs and it's buggered everything up. So bear with me for the next few minutes while it comes back up. And as soon as it does, I will be getting back onto the channel. Now, this is one of the most annoying things about ADSL, is the fact that when somebody calls you, it can fuck your connection up really, really badly. The reason is because it disrupts the signal to... whoa. Hello. Can you hear me now? Oh, please don't tell me. Not again. This really sucks. Major, major balls. Major, major time. I do apologize to all our listeners. As this is an unexpected event. I've never had anything like this happen to me before, so it's quite catastrophic when it happens, and I'm really saddened by this event. Hello.
Oh, this is mother.
Let me explain what happened there.
Oh.
Now, if you remember that a few minutes ago, my phone was going off.
Yeah.
And what happens is, if I don't pick up the phone, it does a redivert, to my downstairs phone, which is a standard landline phone. Uh-huh. Now, in saying that, what happens with ADSL is that it sends a very high voltage down the line to make that phone ring, which completely fucks up your ADSL. Now, my ADSL service provider is about 10 to 8 meg, so that's it requires a very, very quiet line, which is why I disconnected completely.
Don't you have any microfilters?
I do, yeah. But in saying that, that doesn't really help that much when you're getting all that kind of stuff going down your line. So I do apologize.
Just put two filters on it.
Sorry?
Just put two filters on it.
I might do that one day.
You know, just put a filter into the main line, run an extension cord or something like that, even if it's still wrapped up, and then put another one on there.
I might give that a go.
Also depends which filters you're using as well.
Mm.
The BT ones, surprisingly, are very good.
Yeah. I have got three or four filters purely for the reason as sometimes one works better than the other. So I have to swap over. But I found the connection very stable. I've never actually gone down during a show. I think we actually lost a listener on that downtime, but never mind.
Oh well.
So any more related stories or anything like that you want to drop in?
Yeah, actually. The other day there, a friend and I went exploring in Glasgow, a little bit of urban exploration.
Oh, cool.
But we had a goal. I found out from a guy from the Glasgow 2600 that BT has a massive underground network of tunnels underneath Glasgow. Now, these tunnels aren't just, you know, just tunnels where you can walk in. They are
I actually
massive.
Have pictures of them, yeah.
Yeah, but the ones in Glasgow, no one's ever seen.
Wow.
And they are the width of about two streets. And it runs a direct line from the River Clyde all the way. It's run for about 3 miles right through Glasgow city centre. And they're about 150 feet underneath the ground.
Wow.
There is various air vents that suck air in and put air out along those lines. We found a lot of them and I've got pictures.
Wow.
There's actually been a website set up for this. I can't remember the URL off the top of my head, but I'll have to look for it again. But it was the, you know, BT have got a network, you know, they might be using it for installing new technologies, but that isn't the most interesting thing.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is that it was funded by NATO.
Right.
And in addition to the tunnel, there is a massive bunker about 200 feet. No, about 400 feet by 200 feet.
Wow.
In the middle of George's Square, which is this big, massive square thing where the Glasgow City Chambers are and all that. It's like the central point for Glasgow.
Right.
And it's a massive chamber, a massive flat vault thing.
Yeah.
150 feet under the ground. And people have just discovered the last years that it was funded by NATO, built by the General Post Office back then, who controlled the phone network, in fact the entire telecommunication network for the UK. And people want to get under there. There is actually access points where you can get under, but they're bolted from the inside. So people are trying to get inside there, and the starting point looks as if it originates from the BT building. It's called the Dial House in Glasgow.
Is this a thing where you can freely go inside and visit, or is it trespassing only?
Well, it is.
I mean, come on, legally, what is it?
We don't know, because we only discovered it a few years ago, but I'm assuming that it'd be trespassing, because it was built by NATO.
Right.
And there's a massive bunker under Glasgow. A massive tunnel network all over the city.
Right.
So I'm assuming that, and it's actually, from what we learned, it's actually in it's actually in good upkeep. You know, they're constantly putting new stuff into it.
Sure.
And when was it? In February. This guy who... there's a street called Hanover Street. North Hanover Street and Cathedral Street. And at the corner there is where one of the access tunnels, where you go down 150 feet into it is. And they actually saw the military putting tons of equipment in there.
Right.
February. So that's a big clue that it's...
it's still a military installation.
Yeah.
Yeah, God knows what's actually in there.
Yeah, we've found a way in.
Right.
But it involves cutting through some very thick steel. And luckily, one of the guys is actually a welder who has a lot of the cutting equipment and all that. He works at the Glasgow shipyard.
Now, would I be right in saying that if you did break into this military facility, that you won't be on the air ever again? I won't hear from you.
I don't think it's an active military facility, but it's definitely active in the terms of BT using it.
Yeah.
Now, during the war.
How easy is it to get down into the tunnels?
Well, there's various access points down in here, right? There's one big one that looks like an industrial lift for carrying down equipment.
Right.
And the rest are manholes 3 feet by 3 feet with a ladder that goes all the way down 150 feet.
Uh-huh.
So it must be really hard, and so far we've only discovered three of the things.
Sure.
It's right next to the vents that are blown out there.
Yeah.
It's like industrial size air conditioners, but they're disguised as cab boxes.
Right, okay. I have seen a few things like that around London. It would be interesting to... I know for certain, I've seen pictures of these very similar tunnels. They look very, very very much like underground train transport tunnels. And I know that there is a whole separate underground train transport tunnels that's owned by the post office, which transports mail around London.
Yeah, there was a similar tunnel built in Manchester, but the one in Manchester was discovered, and it houses all the communication infrastructure inside Manchester now.
Yeah.
You know, that's open to engineers and all that, to communications people.
That's cool.
By BT.
Mm.
But this one, it leads into Dial House, which is the big BT building in Glasgow.
Yeah.
But we don't know who owns it, what it's used for, and... we know it's still in use because there's air pumping through it.
Yeah.
So, what the hell they're using it for, I don't know.
It would be very interesting to find out.
Yeah, but here's the thing, right? It can't be housing any communications infrastructure for Glasgow, because all the public, every piece of construction work that's done in Scotland has to be public knowledge.
Right.
No matter who it is. Everything has, you know, it's like... the Freedom of Information Act.
Yeah.
In the States and England and that. But Scotland's had it for years.
Right, okay.
So every piece of construction work, you can actually go into a building in Glasgow, find out exactly what work's been done.
Yeah.
And but all the work that BT have done, installing like fibre optics and all that through Glasgow, you know, the big heavy duty lines,
yeah.
MCI installing stuff and a few other people, all of that's...
catalogued.
Yeah, all that's in the ground. And all the documentation is there. There is no work at all. Nothing's been installed in the tunnels.
Right, okay.
So it makes you wonder, what would actually under there?
Well, it could be a possibility that they haven't released that under the Freedom of Information Act. Possibly because that information is classified.
Why would a telecommunications company be classified by the Scottish government?
Why wouldn't they classify information, you know?
Well, for a start, the Scottish government and BT don't exactly get along all that well.
No.
They never have. I mean, it's a lot of people in Scotland know that. But
as you said, if they're on par with NATO and the military, then as soon as you say that M word, alarm bells start to ring, and classifications would be applied to all of this.
There's a theory that's been thrown up in the last few months about 10 miles outside of Glasgow, there's a massive nuclear missile site.
Right.
Underground.
Yeah.
That's actually getting decommissioned this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's already been done. I'm not too sure. You know, like an ICBM silo or something like that.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of nuclear material 10 miles outside of Glasgow.
Uh-huh.
And people think that that was built the exact same time as Glasgow tunnels.
Okay. So carry nuclear material through Glasgow.
So what the one hypothesis is that the tunnels underneath Glasgow is actually a backup communications infrastructure all the way down to Manchester.
Yeah.
And then from Manchester all the way down to London, which controls the nukes.
Aha. Uh-huh. Very interesting.
But it wouldn't explain why it goes from Dyhlhausen BT, which has only been built in the last 5 years.
Mm.
That's only been built in the last 5 years. Before that, there was nothing on that site.
Sure.
So either they've built BT there, and there's still construction work going on in that building, even though it looks finished, and whether they're tunneling down into it.
Possibly.
I mean, it's 150 feet. It's a distinct possibility.
Yeah.
But it runs. It's a direct line all the way from the River Clyde for 3 miles all the way through the GPO building in Glasgow, which is General Post Office's building. Half of that building is still closed off.
Mm-hmm.
No one can get access to that. Even the person that owns the building cannot get access to that.
Oh, right, okay.
So it's weird that maybe thinking that the GPO building is possibly an access point, and that's actually at Georgie Square, where the bunker is.
Right. I think that could possibly be your source of getting in there. As for
the GPO building, by the way, it's like Fort Knox, massive steel doors.
That's probably why. And whatever they're hiding in there, they really want to keep it hidden. As for anyone getting down there, it's a major, probably the best urban exploration you can do in the UK.
Yeah, but not just that. If people actually get down there and blow the whistle on it, like for people are. The media in Scotland are classing them as conspiracy theorists.
Right, okay.
Even though there is good evidence that the tunnels actually exist.
Yeah.
But one person actually suggested opening up the vent cab boxes, which are thick. It is like thick, 6-inch thick steel.
Sure.
It's in a normal cab box. It's disguised as a cab box. That maybe you could open that and send something down to see how far it really goes down.
Yeah.
Or if whatever, you know,
send someone down there on a bit of rope.
Well, it's too thin for it's too narrow for that, but
right, okay.
The,
maybe like a camera on a bit of rope and see what you can pick up, record like a night vision camera.
But it'd be good to open up one of the manholes,
yeah,
that's next to the vents.
That would
That'd be
cool.
Nice. But fuck going down 150 feet ladder,
yeah.
That would just scare the shit out of me.
Yeah, I think it would scare the shit out of me too. Going down an infinite amount in pitch black, you can't see anything, and you can't tell how wide the thing is, how you're going down there, and what's going to be at the bottom.
The first access point into it is, funnily enough, called the Pentagon Center.
Okay.
It's the Pentagon Center is owned by MCI.
Right.
So, and that's where the big... that see look, the internet backbone, it's like all the data networks and all that, the fiber optics, the big heavy duty lines,
mm-hmm.
they come from London into the Pentagon Centre, and then the rest of Scotland. So and they've got a manhole into a secret tunnel 150 feet right below them. It's very I want to know what the fuck's under there. Because, you know, I've lived in Glasgow all my life, and I just found out about this secret tunnel network. And also, some of the theorists are speculating that the tunnel is the cause for Glasgow subsidence. The entire city centre of Glasgow is subsiding.
It's falling down.
Yeah. literally, a good few buildings had to be pulled down in the past 5 years.
Right.
Because of subsidence, and they thought it was because the ground was soft because it's right next to the Clyde.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, but this tunnel adds in. But the sides of the Clyde, they're all concreted off.
Right.
The Clyde has actually been made waterproof now. So they're speculating that the tunnels have got something to do with it now.
Could be.
And if they're
maybe all the nuclear waste underneath the tunnel.
I don't think they'd have nuclear waste under there.
I wouldn't be too surprised.
And if they did, it would explain why I'm so fucked up.
Yeah, I would suggest getting yourself a Geiger counter next time you go down there and just hear how many clicks you get. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if you got a few clicks while you're down there because radiation, you can get radiation anywhere where you are, literally anywhere in the universe.
It'd probably be good to put it to one of the vent exhausts.
Yeah, and pick up how many actual clicks you get. Now, I don't know where you can buy simple commercial Geiger counters or if you can acquire one from school. It would be really cool if you could do that and maybe record that as well.
Yeah, I done physics at school and actually got taught how to build one.
Yeah.
So I can just build one, get stuff from Maplin.
That would be very, very cool. And if you were able to, that could also give you some guidance as to the source of that radiation and possibly where it's being stored. So also if you notice anything, it would be good if you could record that and pass that on.
Yeah.
And maybe carry around a GPS with you as well, above ground, obviously.
All the points where we know where everything has already been GPS mapped.
It has, okay.
So that's good.
That's pretty cool.
People have done that last year.
Okay.
But one person is actually a telecommunications expert.
Uh-huh.
And they're actually going to be applying for a job in MCAI.
Right.
Just to find
just to
out
be able to get down there. Good luck to them.
Yeah. And there's a funny thing, like, the MCI, the Pentagon Center at MCI, is only 200 feet from a police station, the police headquarters in Scotland, and another 200 feet from the BT building.
Right.
Where the BT building is situated is, it's like I told you, if you draw a line in a map, it's a direct line for 3 miles.
Right.
Have the BT building, then you have the Pentagon Center on a direct line.
Okay.
So it's a bit suspicious.
Ah. Also, it might be a good idea to for us to do some urban exploration around our BT Tower, because there's loads of cool stuff around there that you can find out. Obviously, be aware of the fact about what you're doing and you don't
want to... One thing you should look out for is exhaust vents on old derelict buildings.
Yeah.
See, no matter how abandoned or derelict they look, we actually found one right next to BT that had a fan at the bottom, the very, very bottom, that was putting out enough for the industrial air conditioners.
Right.
It's like when they put out a lot of air. Sure, this is what this felt like.
Yeah.
And it was an old derelict building with all that.
Why would it be pumping out all this air?
Yeah, exactly. And that was right next to BT.
Interesting. It might be
another thing that we tried to do. Sorry.
No, go on.
Another thing that we tried to do was pull the construction records for the Dial House at BT.
Yeah.
So I told you that all construction records are public knowledge. We couldn't find any. They all have to be registered with the city. They have to have them. They have to be made available to everybody.
Yeah.
So or let you know, if there's a bomb or something like that, and they have to get in there, they need to know the layout of the building.
Yeah.
Those blueprints were up there.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And the same with the Pentagon Center.
Yeah. This is a very, very touchy subject, and it'd be cool to see what kind of stuff we can unearth from there as the day goes past.
I've been obsessing about this for about a week. So I've been researching everything I could find.
Sure.
But, you know, the only thing that I've pulled up is the stuff that people have already got. You know, the whole project's kind of hit a stone wall.
Yeah, right.
So the next step is to either get someone who knows about it, get someone who built it, or go under. Because this, for what people know, that it's in good upkeep.
Yeah.
So what they're trying to do now is research all the contracts that the post office has had,
right.
Building contracts the post office had, all the building contracts that BT have had, and all the building contracts that the city have had, along with the military.
Yeah.
To see what they can find.
yeah, there's it's going to be a lot of work, and I don't know how much of this is open to the public. I'm sure they've.
Do you know, we actually interviewed a few people in Glasgow.
Yeah,
I've actually got my personal voice recorder.
Cool.
I've not got it with me at the moment though, but we went about and asked about 10 people if they actually knew anything about the underground network in Glasgow, and
right. People
just looked at me as if I was stoned. Seriously. When I tried to explain what it was, they just looked at me as if I was stoned. And
maybe you were, I don't know.
Nah, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I personally think you're just crazy and this is all a conspiracy theory. Because why would the government do anything to harm you? You know, they're always open to everything. They never.
Oh yes, they're out for our interest. They are always out for us.
They're always out for our interest. Everything is open. They don't hide secrets. They don't make stuff up. You know, when they kill someone, they always, you know, own up to it. It's not a problem at all.
Oh yeah, and it's always their fault. They always accept the blame.
Yeah, of course, you know.
Well, we can see that the British government is our fuckwit of the week.
Yeah. And the fuck of the week is the British government. What a surprise there. Thank you for tuning in to Hacker Voice Radio. And Tony Blair, if you're listening, and anyone from MI5, I just want to say, come round for tea and biscuits.
Yes. Then welcome in our house and bring your secret laptops.
Yeah. Doom, doom, doom. Oh shit.
You haven't given us time to hide.
Yeah, you haven't given me time to put in delete all my laptop.
Yeah. Oh, nuts.
I don't know. What would the first thing that you would do if you heard boom boom FBI or boom boom police?
I have a camera outside my door with the infrared notification, so I would know.
Yeah. I would definitely get some sort of recording device up and running as quick as I could, so I could record everything that was happening to me.
Audio was already recording in my house anyway.
What's that?
I record all audio inside my house.
Oh, right, okay.
See, if anybody ever meets me, you'll realise that I'm so incredibly paranoid for everyone. Seriously.
That is true, and you are very paranoid within me, you, and planet and everything. Probably the most paranoid, except for Kissit. I think he's even scared of himself sometimes.
But you have to be paranoid though.
Yeah, that's true. You have to be on edge all the time, and if you're not, then there's something terribly wrong with you.
Yes. Do not never take anything at face value. Nothing appears normal. There is no normal.
Yeah. There's always something behind the curtain.
Always.
There's always a mask. There's always a face behind that mask, you know. And whenever you're investigating something, don't ever take it to be at face value, because you can bet your cards straight that whatever you're seeing isn't the truth.
Yeah. And another thing, if you think that the government isn't monitoring you, they are.
Yeah.
They are.
They're monitoring your text messages, they're monitoring your phone calls, it's all being processed. I myself did a test to see where my chats were being relayed through. A simple NeoTrace would do it, and you can see everything is being pushed through one point in America. And yeah. It takes roughly 42 to 50 milliseconds to go through, but in the logic of the internet, everything would find the perfect fastest route. So why would it route through another 6 hops to get to where it needs to go? I myself do not understand.
It's all because of the root of the net is a computer in California controlled by the government.
Yeah.
And that's to do with the domain name system.
Sure.
I'm actually writing an article at the moment where it's more of a white sheet that I'm writing.
Yeah.
On DNS and how it can be used to
bring down the internet.
Yeah, you can actually see with just hacking one computer, you can destroy the entire internet.
That's true.
just one computer called Root, and it's the root of the internet. People think that the internet is a collective, that if one computer goes down, the other one fills in the gap.
Yeah.
If the root goes down, we're fucked. You have to rely on IP addresses.
But the root of the IP address, the root of the internet, the DNS motherlord, the overlord, is a collection of 13 machines, isn't it? The dot before the com. So you have the dot, the com, the dot, the domain, the machine.
No. It's once it's finished, I'll put it on the website. Cool. Yeah, it's finished. It should be finished by next week.
But there is a invisible dot before the com, and that's the root of the internet.
The thing about the dot that you speak of, you know,
yeah,
in the domain name hierarchy,
yeah,
dot is root, whereas, you know, in Unix system, slash is root.
Sure.
Root is actually a dot.
Yeah. And if you were able to gain root,
it's like you're saying, you know, the dot before the com. Yeah, you're right there. In Unix systems, you have like slash user bin.
Yeah.
In the internet, it's hostname root com.
Mm.
So it's interesting the way it works. Another thing, see if people think that the ARPANET is closed down. The ARPANET is not closed down. If you look at the way the domain name system works,
yeah,
you have flit.com.net.edu. .arpa is still active.
Yeah.
And there's actually a way that you can set up your own domain name system, well, domain name server, and have a .arpa address.
Wow. Okay.
And I might show people how to create their own .arpa address.
Mm.
But I bet you that as soon as I do, we'll get told by the people who control the computers, the U.S. government, to take that file off.
Let's just see if we do. It might be a good little test.
Yeah, it would be actually. But I'm actually doing a dot for this month's 2600, but next month I might show people how to do that. But I'm going to be showing it in college. I start college on Monday.
Cool.
And as soon as I get free time, I'm going to get people together and show them how they can get root on the internet.
Yeah. Now, it'd be interesting to see how long it would take them to shut us down.
Yeah, I want to create a website, hackers.arpa.
Yeah.
So, that'd be fun.
Yeah, definitely.
I also want to create my own top level domain, but that's a bit harder.
Yeah, definitely. You'd have to kiss a lot of ass.
And not just that, I'd have to actually get access to the root of the internet,
yeah.
And US government firewalls?
But a lot of that stuff is actually automated, and all of that DNS.
They have overlords of the DNS.
Yeah, the overlords.
Mm. That's what I call them.
Yeah.
But if the host computer, I mean, you, in the old days before DNS, it used to be host.txt, and then as the internet grew, they had to manually update it, and it became so hard.
Yeah.
So that's when the domain name system got created. But I've got tons of stuff that I learned about DNS and when I discovered Linux, it was like 2000, 2001, and it's been a wee fascination of mine. So I'm writing this white sheet, and I'll shove it in the site, in the article section.
Cool.
It's actually a lot interesting than what people think, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I've been to google.com, learn how it works, it's so incredible.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah, the internet in itself is a fucking miracle how it works.
Yeah. And what people might think that the internet's controlled by the fastest computers in the world, you know, the big supercomputers, when in actual fact it's controlled by computers that are 20 years old.
Yeah. It doesn't take much power to do that DNS, but what it does take is to route that traffic, and separate things do that, like routers and firewalls and things like that. Have you heard about the Internet version 2?
Yeah.
Now that's some cool stuff, and how it works.
It's a shame that it's only opened up to universities, but it's good the way they're
Yeah.
You know, the Internet 2 was created upon the principles of the first Internet, the one we're using just now, and that's freedom of information. It's a universal network where everything is just shared on it. There's sure. no restrictions, no laws or anything like that, although the MPAA and the RIAA have tried to restrict file sharing on it, but there's no law against file sharing on the Internet 2.
No, exactly. You're free to do what you please on the internet. That's why we're doing this, because we're sharing information.
That's because it's a closed internal network.
Yeah,
that's essentially what it is.
Yeah, exactly. It's like me saying I'm gonna spend fuck knows how much money to make my own closed network, which will span the globe, and only who I say can jump on it. Because to actually jump on it doesn't mean you can become a node of it. You actually become part of the whole network. You route traffic through. It's a major deal. That's why only it's open up to large universities.
There is actually a way to get on it. Someone in somewhere actually bridged the internet and internet too.
Yeah.
So people could actually gain access to
it. There is a bridge, yeah, that's right. But I think it only works one way.
It got closed down within an hour.
Yeah.
So that would have been funny messing around with it.
Definitely. You'd be very cool to jump on it and sniff traffic.
The connection is so incredibly fast as well. Yeah. The only bottleneck you have is your hard drive.
That's right. And I was actually talking about this on the earlier episodes of Hacker Voice Radio about the Internet 2. And it's incredibly fast. So the bottleneck is literally your machine and how fast you can read data.
Yeah, it'd be cool if there was any bandwidth restrictions in the internet as we know it today. You know, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
If everybody had a
10 meg connection, yeah.
Or a 1 gig pipe. Yeah. You know, that'd be like, the technology's there.
Yeah.
They're not going to share. They want to, you know, the communication companies want to rip you out of so much money.
There's definitely a very top-sided hierarchy to the internet now, where the lower down nodes have a very small pipe, and the higher up you get, the bigger the pipe gets. And there's different levels to the internet itself. There's, you know, the level 1 top level, level 2 and level 3 where traffic is routed, and you could jump between levels as you go, hop around the internet. Let's just see how many hops there are to me and you. There are currently 4 hops to get to you, to talk to you right now.
I'm not actually on the BT network. I'm using what's called the Ethernet.
Yeah.
My PlusNet is controlled by Level 3 Communications.
Yeah.
And they run something called the Ethernet. I don't have to go through any slow BT pipes.
Sure.
I mean, that's what part of the upgrade was.
Neither do I now.
The upgrades that we're doing yesterday, which was off, was improving the Level 3 stuff.
Cool. Also, I want to talk to this guy that keeps on jumping on IRC, but I never managed to get a response from him. He looks like he's from the UK, seeing as his domain is BT Central.
Who's that?
You're not in the channel, are you?
No.
Okay. Well, I won't really reveal his nick. I'm live on air, so you might not want me to do that. But if you do see somebody jumping on, do start a chat with them, and if you want, tell them about what we're doing, and they're free to join the channel and, you know, talk to us, because, you know, we're trying to spread the message.
Yeah. Have you reset your servers in the past few days?
Have I reset my, sorry?
Your servers, your internet connection, or
For what?
No, I just noticed that you had a different IP address.
Yeah, my IP address changes. I change it maybe twice a week or something like that.
Alright. No, I was just wondering, and I was like, it's a different IP.
Yeah.
I've got a good head for numbers, so I can always remember like people's IP addresses.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, you're on so-and-so's computer, and I'm like, how the fuck do you know that? And I was like, the IP address.
Yeah, I like to jump around my IP addresses. I don't want to stick to one.
Yeah, I always prefer the one because I'm hosting the DNS.
Yeah.
You know, so I need to have a static IP.
Sure.
That's the only thing I've got to miss when I'm going to Bulldog, but I think I think they actually do static IPs, but for an extra charge. We want everybody to pay though, because I love having a static IP, whereas, you know, if the DNS isn't working and I'm away from the computer, so like when I was in the States,
yeah,
I could actually just, you know, telnet into the computer or SSH or whatever.
Sure. That sounds cool. That's something I do, not on a regular basis, but I do once I'm away home. I jump on, I have like a web page that loads up, obviously with an authentication window, and yeah. I do all my stuff through there. But I have found that I do get several kind of DNS problems from my end as well, which I have to just double click shit so it runs through DNS. I guess it just takes a long time for it to query. I'm not sure who my DNS is at the moment, but it's probably one of the Bulldog ones, so yeah. Or I could use you as my DNS.
Use me, baby.
Yeah. You see a lot of traffic coming through.
There was something I wanted to give a shameless plug to myself.
Yeah.
To support myself in college and to support the Hacker's Voice, I'm actually going to be setting up a online t-shirt store.
Oh, cool.
Store. It's got to be selling t-shirts and stickers and all the other hacker swag for the Hacker's Voice and all that. And some other stuff. I mean, I've been planning to do this for months and months now. You know, me and two friends been like to do this, like, because we had custom t-shirt designs, but it was too much for you know, just to get three t-shirts printed.
Yeah.
Or like three stickers or whatever. So what we've got to do is get whatever designs we want, you know, buy in bulk and then just sell the rest of them.
That'd be very cool.
So we're setting up a...
So have you got have you got any designs so far as for stickers and t-shirts?
No, that's why I wanted to shout out. If anybody has any design ideas,
yeah,
let us know and we will give you... once they're printed, we will give you free stuff.
That'd be very cool.
It's free stuff.
Do I get anything for free?
Yes.
Oh, thanks.
Yay!
Yeah, that would be very cool. I'd love to wear a Hacker Voice Radio t-shirt.
Yeah.
And have a little sticker so I can stick it on my laptop as well.
And the main reason for the stickers is so people can just stick them everywhere. The stickers are going to be cheap.
Yeah.
Between £1.50 and £5 each.
Cool. So if you're walking down the road and you feel like sticking on somebody's back of their somebody's head, back of somebody's clothing, on billboards, on really big like commercial adverts, just stick it on somebody's face on the actual billboard, that's very cool. Stick it on lampposts, stick it on inside BT payphones, anywhere you feel. I might even consider having like a little slogan at the bottom, like something that was on your signature before, like bringing the hacking freaking scene back to the UK or something like that, would be very cool, so that people understand what it's about.
Yeah, so if anyone has any suggestions for slogans or any comments on the stickers or t-shirts or any ideas whatsoever, let me know personally, mrscobie@gmail.com. Contact details are on the website, hackervoice.co.uk.
Yeah.
It's got to take a wee bit of money to actually start it up.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
It's like a merchant account for accepting credit card transactions, for accepting PayPal and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's going to cost about £1,000 to start. But I will have that money in 2 months.
I have to say, that's the most... You're probably going to be the biggest spender on our project, seeing as I've invested in domains and server space and bandwidth, and as far as I know, Planet's invested in web space and hosting space.
Well, what I'm hoping to do is set up you know, a service with forums and all that.
Yeah.
You know, people who are members of the Hacker's Voice, you know, that people who listen to the show, visit the site, you know, contribute in some way, will be able to get massive discounts.
Yeah.
Maybe a t-shirt for a fiver.
Sure.
Yeah.
But we're not looking to make money out of this. It's not that we're doing this for the money. I never even had the intention of having a donate button. This is slowly going out of our pockets and for the cause. And obviously everything needs fucking money because everything's running on electricity. We could just send this radio out through smoke signals, but I don't think it'll reach everyone. So what we're doing is it's basically asking you to pay £5 or something stupid like that for a t-shirt.
The thing is, it's a private business that I'm setting up, like a small business.
Right.
You know, just like for Hacker Stuff and to keep me through college. Mm. But the Hacker's Voice stuff, every payment you make for Hackers, the Hacker's Voice swag goes straight to paying for Hacker's Voice.
Yeah.
Bandwidth, the site, everything.
Yeah, that being said, unless we sold 100 t-shirts a day, we'd probably break even then.
You never know.
You never know.
But anything that's to do with the Hacker's Voice goes to the Hacker's Voice. Mm. You know, it will have its own section in the site.
Yeah.
And the same for anybody else, you know, that wants customs. If they have a show and they want us to sell their stuff, we'll sell your stuff.
Or host your show for free as well.
Would that not be expensive?
No, I don't see any reason why I can't host them live on the Shoutcast server for free. It's...
Oh, the Shoutcast server, yeah.
Yeah.
Do that. I thought you meant on the web server.
No, that would slightly, unless we got some sort of partnership going.
Yeah, we need to find someone else.
Sure.
But, swag coming soon.
Yeah, definitely.
Hopefully around about October, I just need to sort everything out. You know, register as a business and all that shit.
And I was actually thinking of setting up competitions, and I want to get these t-shirts out as soon as we can and stickers out as soon as we can, so we can have a few competitions on the Hacker Voice meetings where, I don't know, you know, ideas for competitions would also be appreciated. I was thinking, like, who can come up with a good hack or something like that, and you'll be given a t-shirt and a sticker or like a little Hacker Voice pack or something like that.
Actually, got something to add to that.
Go ahead.
As a competition, I've got setting up a special box that's been tight, the security is relatively tight. What I want you to do is to root that box.
Ah.
And if you do, we'll give you free stuff.
Yeah, and you have to make it leak, so you have to put your nick everywhere on it and everything.
Yeah, yeah. I need to set out some guidelines for what you can do. You qualify for competition, you know, you could...
install Windows on it.
Oh, don't...
Install Windows 2.1 on it. I mean, 3.1.
Like, stuff like changing a host name or something like that, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll think of stuff, but
cool.
Root the box and then do shit to it. You have to find the right box though. Because if you do the wrong one, I'm gonna be pissed. Okay.
How would you define which box it is if it's like your personal computer?
Well, I don't think I'll have it connected to my network.
Would you have it on a separate subnet?
Probably. I might even have it in a separate connection.
Oh, okay.
I'm not too sure about that, but I prefer that it wasn't on the network, considering I'm going to be spending a shitload of money building it.
I don't think that people will be able to root my network. They can sure try. And the thing is, I've always, when I got into the scene, I was trying to get people to do stuff to my network, because the only way you learn is by your mistakes. And if somebody's found a mistake and they've managed to get into your network, you're like, oh shit, I completely overlooked that. Okay, I'll go back and fix it. And then next time round, you're more secure, should I say. Never fully secure.
Yeah, you can never feel secure, especially when you're running Windows.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the whole... I mean, how I got started was... You know, I started with Linux in 2000 and just worked my way up from there, and I set up my own private network, and I started attacking my own network, seeing what vulnerabilities there was and how I could exploit those vulnerabilities and eventually how I could patch them. And that's when I got into programming.
Yeah, there's, it's a very long learning curve, and if anyone is interested in learning about hacking, you have to basically sit back and assess how much time you have in your life and basically dedicate yourself to it fully, learning as much as you can, and you will soon find if you are in the mindset to do it, because I believe strongly, I might be wrong, but you have to be either born to do it or not. It's a one or a zero. You either are or you're not.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. You have to have an insane curiosity about things. I mean, how I started hacking was I moved into a new house in 2000 and we got Sky Digital installed. So I had the old analog dish from the old house.
Yeah.
And what I'd done with the old dish was I took that and I had the old satellite box from the late 80s, early 90s. And I started fucking about with that. Doing some hardware hacking, some electronics and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I could actually get the
signal
encryption on the smart card.
Yeah. I think that's a lot of, that's closely coming on to how I started off as well, but I won't go into it because it's a long story. But if you do have, from a very early childhood, an insane curiosity of having to find out how things work and opening things up and breaking things, because that's the only way you learn, you are yourself a hacker. And if you manifest that curiosity into a positive lifestyle, then you will become very soon very wise at what you're doing, and the more you do something, you become an expert at it, basically.
I mean, I started off with the hardware hacking, you know, and then I destroyed a few phones. And I started freaking, and I realised that there wasn't much freaking that could be done in the UK. I started by reading the Anarchist Cookbook. That's how I started with hacking. And you know, stuff like that. Then I got into computers, and well, I'd always been at computers. You know, I had a small network set up. You know, on Windows for fucking things. And then in 2000, with Linux and all that, started doing all this really cool stuff. Basically, it was to so I could learn how to hack people's machines just for the fun of it. You know, my friend Walker, who's actually sat in a few shows that we've done, actually hacked his Windows box a good few times and changed his wallpaper. just to annoy the fuck out of him, so he wonders how I've done it.
Yeah.
That's how I started it off, was like the showing off thing that I'd done in the skills network. I showed how I could get admin access, which was pretty easy on NT.
Yeah, very easy. Especially with LAN manager and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I didn't even do stuff like that. It's a bit of social engineering as well. But see, if anybody is interested, you know, they don't know how to hack, or they're wondering how they can actually get the motivation to get into it, I suggest that people listen to Kevin Mitnick's keynote speech at the Fifth Hope. You know, go to the Fifth Hope website, download that, and he's got a good story to tell.
They are also streaming 24/7 on our Shoutcast server.
Yeah, they're on it as well. And on the, once the art sections finally get completed, there will be tons of things in there about, I think I've got over 100 ebooks on learning Linux.
Right.
About 50 ebooks on, which has all been converted to HTML, by the way.
Cool.
50 ebooks on learning various Unix systems, about programming. I think there's about 150 books in them.
Cool.
Various white sheets that I've collected, and a few that I've written myself on encryption, vulnerabilities, exploits, stuff like that.
Cool.
And what else am I putting in it? There won't be anything but it's like tools, security tools.
Yeah.
We won't have anything like that, because the whole idea of this, and the whole idea of the learning curve, is for you to develop your own.
Yeah.
You know.
Or at least see how the ones work, how they work, and hack them to make them do something you want them to do, apart from what they already do. If that makes any sense to you, then I'm not chatting shit.
I guess.
Also, we are running into 1 hour and a half. So, for the sake of this file not being 200 megabytes, we might consider closing off the recording sometime in the next 10 to 15 minutes. And carrying on the live broadcast, because we do have quite a number of listeners, and I'd hate to just cut this off right now and leave them.
How many do we have?
We've currently got 4 or 5 at the moment. Somebody keeps
shout to all the 4 and 5 listeners we have.
Yeah,
we love you.
4 and a half listeners.
The 4 and a half listeners.
Yeah.
Other half is somewhere else. But the whole idea of the Haggard's Voice, and I'm glad that we're finally getting in. Finally for fulfilling what we intended to do, and that's how to teach people how to do it and how to bring the community back and how to get newer people into it.
Definitely.
Because
this was our from the start of how we founded it was a case of seeking other people that are like you. It was simply just looking at their fucking IP address and going, hey, how's it going? Do you want to chat? And that was basically it.
That's how us three got together in the Binref channel.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone shouted out, is there any UK people in here? Not people do the UK host names went into this top of the channel.
Yeah, that's. I think I did that. I said, somebody said something about a pound, and I said, hey, you must be from the UK, come to this channel, we'll chat. And I set up a channel before called H4X0R. So we were all chatting in there, and we thought, well, I was always meaning to ask this, but you don't want to. It's very difficult to say, how about we form a group? Because this is the first time you've met these people, and it's usually the same like that. It's kind of different when you meet people face to face, because obviously you can see them and you can assess their reactions. But when you're online. Sorry, go on.
Oh, sorry, continue.
No, it's fine, go on.
Alright, and I was just going to say that after me, you, and Planet had been talking for about an hour and a half, it says, by the way, I've been planning to do this radio show since May.
Yeah.
You guys want to do it?
And then we're like, oh, I was going to do this as well, so why not just join forces?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then a few things happened where I couldn't actually be on the show full time.
That's right.
You know, maybe not a weekly basis. No, I'm so lucky I've got the time before college to be in the show so much. The past week, but you know, I said I had to take a step back and let Planet and Belial do the show.
Yeah,
but you know, it gives me more time to do the things behind the scenes about what I contribute, what I want to put into it.
Definitely,
and keep true to the ideals that we actually set out in that first night in that IRC channel.
And if you are considering rising up the ranks of hackerdom, if I can call it that, from being, you know, where you are now, thinking, oh, I can never get up to that elitism. It's nothing to do with that. Basically, all it takes is some certain determination, a lot of dedication, and contribution.
Yeah.
So that's basically it. And from when you start off, you will find yourself talking to a lot of people. And it can get very tedious, but also take time yourself to analyze and consider how you feel about things and what you want to do in your life. And then, you know, manifest that into basically what you do, and that's hacking. And you will find yourself very quickly, within a few months' time, taking up projects by yourself. Mm-hmm. And good things always happen.
Yeah, obviously. The main goal behind THV is the very first hacker ethic, and that is share information, you know, freedom of information and all that. But we are kind of, at the moment, we're small. You know, there's 3 main people that are working on this.
Myself, you, and Planet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if, you know, we're not like a, you know, a hacking group.
No.
We, you know, take place in hacking contests or that. We don't do that. What we do is we are the teachers.
Yeah. And basically, what I want to say to that is, we are a hacking group, but so are you. You right now, who's listening to me, is also part of this group, and you can be as committed to us I say that, you could be right now on this show talking to us, or you could just be listening, or you could be sending us emails about information that you found out. You could be in the IRC channel talking to us. You could dial in, leave us a message or something like that, and contribute in your own way. It's very much open to you, and we've tried to build an architecture around that and have enough space for people to be able to tune into us and learn something from us. And in saying that, it's also a two-way process where we learn from you.
Yeah.
So that's all about as I can say on that matter.
Essentially, we are here for you.
Yeah, and you are hopefully there for us as well.
Yeah, and our main goal here is to, you know, make a difference within the hiking community of the UK.
Definitely.
And build it back up.
Sure. And also, any porn, do send it to my private email address, which is...
or his private FTP server.
Yeah, my private FTP server, which can be reached at belial.pornstation.com. And a password for that is obviously Belial, because, you know, it's always on default.
Yeah. Can't blame me, he's a Windows user.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
Thanks. No, you know... I have to say that I've been on Windows for a very long time, and the best thing about it is because you know how it works, you can also exploit it that way. And this is why I'm trying to get into Linux, and now I think I've had Linux installed for a week now, and I'm kind of using it as my standard XP desktop. I have no difference apart from a few headaches trying to compile things when things don't work and you don't have this library and you don't have that and all this kind of compiling shit that I'm still trying to get used to.
That's what happens when you use a distro instead of building your own.
Sure. So I'm going to have to install things from scratch, basically. But
that's the good fun of it, though.
Yeah.
Because once you learn how to compile stuff in Linux, any Unix system, and you learn how it actually works, you know, eventually, after a few months, you'll actually step back a bit and you realise that you actually know a lot about the system.
Yeah.
When you first realised, and that it gives you a great sense of satisfaction as well.
And freedom.
Yeah. And that knowing that you control the operating system.
And not the operating system controlling you, which is something you always find with Mr. Bill Gates, is that you are never too sure of exactly what's happening when you install something, because you don't have that full control. And with Linux, you do. You know exactly what process is running at what time, what it's doing, and that's pretty much it. And as far as that goes, you can actually see face-to-face what the code is of the program you're about to install in certain cases.
I don't even think Bill Gates knows what the hell the operating system does.
I'm sure that the way Microsoft is actually as a company, it's so large that most of the other parts of the company don't know about other parts with themselves, sort of thing.
That's true.
Yeah, it's
the Redmond campus is so fragmented, it's unbelievable.
It's insane. Actually,
Microsoft is the new IBM.
Yeah.
You know, which is scary.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to think it, I'd actually prefer Big Blue than Microsoft.
Right.
Because Big Blue, they only deal with hardware.
Sure.
Whereas Microsoft deal with the software.
Yeah, which reaches everyone. Because you have the option of not buying IBM hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Or in some cases, no, but you know. And shouts go out to all our listeners again. I just want to say thank you for listening to us, and thank you for contributing, especially in the meetings and everything. And I do want to repeat again that we will be setting up Hacker Voice meetings, not located at a specific place. I'm hopefully they're going to be modular so that they can be spread across the UK and somehow linked in together. So if you are planning on doing something like that, talk to us and we'll see what we can do in some way of recording what's happened during a meeting, either a physical actual voice recording or maybe some sort of minutes or something stupid like that, but definitely so we can collate everything together and make it into one big package, so we can say here in the Midlands this is what happened, here in London this is what happened, here's a video of it, here's a voice recording of it, here's the text or something like that, which will be cool, and we can develop this over the next few months, maybe even years.
Yeah. And if anybody wants to join the Haggis Voice or the radio show Haggis Voice Radio, do contact us, because we want people to come in and you know, contribute what they have. You know, this is a show and a group, a community designed for you.
It's so, it's an open source radio show.
Yeah. If you could say that, it's a free radio show.
Yeah. It's also open to everyone. You are free to call me right now. You can do that, and I won't drop your call. Hopefully, Skype won't drop your call as well. And you could be talking to us right now, broadcasting across the globe, and everyone can hear you.
I think that just about does it for this week's show. But
I think so.
Keep me. Hope to see you again tomorrow night, and you know, check out our website if you want to contact us.
Definitely.
Hackervoice.co.uk.
Cool, and thank you for listening, and we hope to bring out another show tomorrow.
Yep.
Definitely will. It's quite tiring, but we're still there. So, it's been a good episode, and I've been Bilal.
And a good evening from Scobie.
And you've been a great audience.
Yes, thank you, thank you. Don't whistle, just throw money.
Yeah. So, I think we might carry on the show, or we might carry on the discussion after. But as far as the actual recording goes,
because my voice is actually sore.
Yeah, definitely. So, join us in the IRC if you want to chat. And it's a goodbye from Hacker Voice on the 23rd of August, 2005.
Ciao.